I am Plant on the Line in Vancouver at thecommentary.ca. John Twigg is back. The political commentator has been providing thecommentary.ca with his analysis of politics in this province and beyond. He joins me now to do the same. Last evening, the BC NDP elected Adrian Dix, its new leader. He becomes the leader of the official opposition and will face the new BC Liberal Premier Christy Clark in an election that most predict will be sooner rather than later. John will provide his thoughts on the NDP's leadership contest, where we go from here. As well, we might touch on the current federal election campaign. John Twigg was press secretary to Premier Dave Barrett and a former interim leader of the BC Refederation Party. His analysis of the BC leadership, the NDP leadership race from Friday is up elsewhere on this website. Please welcome back to the Plant Online program, John Twigg. Good morning, Mr. Twigg.
Good morning, Joe, and sorry for almost interrupting, but...
No, you don't think an election...
Sooner rather than later, not likely.
No.
As a matter of fact, I just heard Christy Clark on the NW saying that nothing before the HST referendum, which is, according to their timetable, going to not be announced until August. Their voting starts in June. And now, yes, it's always possible, never say never in politics, but if they were to go in August as well, then you'd have all of the teachers out and not at work, able to campaign against the Liberals. So there would be nothing until September at the earliest. And even then, it's going to be a very busy, hectic time. And I suspect that the polls will be moving around. I would expect an uptick for Dix. Yeah, I mean, whoever would have won, the leadership would have had an uptick in the polls. So the gap between the BC Liberals, Christy Clark, and the Adrian Dix NDP, how does that sound? I think will narrow over the short term, and then, you know, we'll see. It could be a whole new game in September. We could be until next spring or even the full term. BC politics is great because it's sometimes hard to predict.
Yeah. What do you think, though? It'll certainly be before 2013, right?
Well, no.
Well, you never know.
If Christie started doing poorly in the polls, like if the HST got defeated and then what they replaced it with was even worse, you know, and then they would take a year or two to get that fixed, if at all. You know, the traditional thing about it is sort of an interim premier, you might say, or somebody who didn't get a mandate but becomes premier, is that they have to establish their governing style in order to earn a mandate. And, you know, we see this, especially on the prairies, I saw it, and others too. And sometimes, you know, a premier proves that they can do it, and they get, you know, a new mandate that runs for length. So that's where Christie is now. I think a lot of people, regardless of their partisan orientations, are saying, you know, let's see how she does.
So she's in the midst of a by-election campaign in Gordon Campbell's old riding of Vancouver Point Grey. Is that a slam dunk for her?
May 11th. And no, because the NDP has a strong candidate, in David Eby, of the BC Civil Liberties Association executive director. Very media savvy, and he was at the convention yesterday in Vancouver and gave a pretty good little presentation. He actually sang a song by Bon Jovi, and he butchered the song, but...
Yeah, that's what I heard, yeah.
But the audience enjoyed it, and the point was well made in terms of, you know, keep trying. And he's going to run hard in Burrard. And, you know, what would that do? I mean, imagine if the NDP won that. I'm not saying it'll happen, but, you know, that would throw a huge curveball into BC politics.
Yeah. Would she have to leave then?
Well, one of the things she could do is call an election and then run in Coquitlam or something. I mean, run against Farnworth, for example.
Yeah.
We got to see how things go, you know, like the outcome of the HST referendum is going to be interesting. The outcome of the federal election could be influential. You know, like what if the BC, if the federal Liberals got wiped out in BC?
Mm-hmm.
I'm not saying that'll happen either. I mean, they could. What if the federal Liberals do really well in BC?
Yeah. What? So you were down at the convention center yesterday.
Oh yeah, it was a good event. Political events go, it was nothing like the Socred Whistler campaign, but it was good. You know, the band was good, the hockey was on, there was no booze.
Yeah. Now, you're a member of the party, right?
Yes, actually, yeah. I made a note to, as I heard you do the introduction, I was saying, yeah, I guess, but that's on the website.
Yeah.
You know, people know that.
Yeah. Now, how did you vote? I mean, did you vote at each ballot yesterday, or had you voted before?
Oh, I was going to say I'm going to be like Jim Sinclair and not say who I voted for. But, no, I purposely voted there because I wanted to preserve the rights of people, at least in the party, to vote that way. I wanted to hear the speeches. I mean, I had a pretty good idea of what I was going to do, but I had some options, and I wanted to see the performances and the speeches, if that would sway me at all. And to some extent, it did. And so I voted live. And actually, it was a near-run thing because I was in the lineup to get to the little computer to do it, and time was running out, and people were hauling out their cell phones, and maybe I could try to vote online. But anyway, we all got through. But the story, and I'll give Ron Palmer credit for this, and The Sun in general, for their coverage today, and I haven't seen The Province or the other papers yet, but only 10% of the people voted live, and the vast majority had pre-voted by a mail-in preferential ballot. Long answer for the question.
Yeah.
It was a mail-in preferential ballot with optional live voting.
Yeah, so if you voted beforehand, you could vote, you voted either 1, 2, or 3, I guess, right?
You could only vote, you could choose to vote for only 1, 2, or 3, or 4, but
yeah.
I mean, it's pointless to vote for 4.
Yeah.
And I, from analyzing the voting results, which are probably available online somewhere by now, maybe not, but there were quite a few people who, like, there was 500 and some odd who voted for Dana Larson, and of those, only about 250 had a second choice, even though Larson had said, hey, I'm going to send my support to Horgan. Well, about only half of them had a second choice.
Now, in the leadership race, you endorsed John Horgan. Is that correct?
Well,
I mean, I saw your name on his website.
Yeah, I did. You're right. But I never wore a button. I don't generally wear buttons anyway.
Yeah.
And the piece that I wrote for you is, in reading it in retrospect, I thought it was pretty balanced. And I got a lot of favorable feedback from it, too, by the way.
Yeah.
So, I'm a member.
Now there was a lot of talk before the race that, before the vote, that he could have come up the middle like Stefan Dion did and win. Now, what happened there?
Well, it's because of the preferential vote. There was very little momentum, the mail-in pre-voting.
Mm-hmm.
So there was only like about 10% of the votes that were live on the floor. And when the gap is like 25%, well, you're not going to get anywhere. But, I mean, that's the way it was. Everybody knew. But it'll give the party, and I don't know if I can really say I know the party, but it'll give a lot of people in the party pause to think about, well, maybe we should make it easier for people to vote live. And actually, it was easy to do both. The mail-in ballot was interesting. There was 28,000 some odd 500 eligible people. Only 20,000 votes came back.
I heard Thielman yesterday on I think it was CBC television. I was watching bits of it, of the coverage yesterday, and he was saying that this is the way that political conventions are being held now, in this country at least.
Well, I mean, I bumped into Jan O'Brien, the provincial secretary, yesterday, and I told her I had no complaints. I thought it was overall pretty good. I thought the entry fees for leadership candidates were a little high, but the party needed the money, and so the leaders financed the campaign to some degree from their donations.
So just before the vote yesterday, my friends over at City Caucus, citycaucus.com, the blog here in Vancouver, tweeted me to remind me that Dix would win because of all the forms that his people submitted with membership fees stapled to them. Is this something that was a factor in the race, and do you think this will factor in his leadership in the weeks and months to come?
Well, I credit your friends at City Caucus for being pretty astute, because Dix led on the first ballot, he led on the second ballot, and he led on the third ballot, and the difference at the end was probably a few thousand sign-ups that he did in the Indo-Canadian community before the 90-day window closed.
Yeah.
He was up by 600 votes on the first ballot.
Really?
Yeah. He gained about 100 from Daniel Larson on the second ballot, and that put him up by about 800. And then he gained about half of Horgan's 5,000. He was up about 2,000. And Farnworth was up about 2,000 out of Horgan's votes. And, of course, that means that there was about 1,000 of Horgan's votes who had no second or third choice.
So this, I mean, during the just before the vote, I guess, or a few weeks before the vote, they brought in, I guess, the former chief electoral officer to look at some of this, didn't he?
Window dressing.
Oh.
I mean, it was nice. It made it look good. The Liberals never thought of anything like that. Harry, the former chief electoral officer.
Neufeld, right?
Neufeld, yes,
yeah.
Thank you. Nice man, good man. Should still be the chief electoral officer, except for the Liberals fired him because he was honest.
Now, what about Dix's past? There was a just as soon as he was proclaimed leader, the BC Liberal Party tweeted a reminder to all of us of this memo that he backdated when Glenn Clark was premier.
That's really good. I thought you were going to say in his first scrum there was a question asked about the backdated memo, and the question.
Yeah.
For the record, came from CKNW, and it's a fair question, and Dix's answer is, you know, it's up to the people to decide, and, you know, everybody listening to us talk now can have their own opinion. I'm not saying that I have the last word, and my opinion is always right, but I will say this in his defense. It was a while ago, and he's since won two elections, 2005 and 2009. So he has received forgiveness from the electorate, at least in his riding. But if I was the Liberals, I would raise the same questions.
Now, can he unite the NDP?
He's already done it.
He has.
There will be some loose edges, some fringes. I would think, like, for example, if Dix became premier, you might not see Jenny Kwan in cabinet. Because she was the leader of the, she was the one that put the axe, the final knife, into Carol James, and frankly, I admire her bravery and integrity in doing so, because it needed to be done. But she may pay the price. However, guys like Nicholas Simons, who joined the Baker's Dozen, Claire Trevena, they'll probably still be wanted and needed, and certainly Dix stated that in his acceptance speech, that he said every single MLA is important, blah, blah, blah. So it's not in Dix's interests to keep that fight up, but perhaps some of his people will anyway.
Now, he mentioned right off the top of his speech last night that he brought it up, the what people in the press have been talking about, that against Christy Clark, I mean, she wins in style. I mean, is that a contention that you share?
How do you mean she wins in style? Oh, I get it. It's like her style is better than Dix's style.
Yeah.
Well, let's see 6 months from now. Let's see 3 months, 2 months. Let's have a session of the legislature and see. You know, most people that are listening to us, most of the people that have been born since creation, haven't seen much of an NDP opposition on TV in Victoria, in the legislature, because the leader has been a nice, very nice lady, but just too weak to go after people in a hard, tough way. But, you know, Dix is an athlete. I mean, he's a terrible athlete. He's a lousy basketball player. But, you know, like, he's, even though he's diabetic, he's physically robust. And, you know, you listen to him on NW where he talks about NFL football. You know, he and Baldry, Keith Baldry, had a little sort of a game where they were predicting NFL outcomes. You know, Dix loves to compete on intellectual and any other level you want to compete with him on.
Now, let's move to the federal election for just a sec here. Elizabeth May, she's running, I guess, in Saanich.
Who?
Elizabeth May, the Green Party leader.
Oh.
I guess he's not going to win. from that tone, she won't win? Is that your...
Oh, well, it depends on the riding, but I know that riding. I lived in it for a few years, a long time ago, and I drive through it regularly. I doubt it.
Yeah.
And it's not... You know, I mean, the MP there, Gary Lunn, is not a weak politician. I mean, he's not prime minister material either. I don't think he has the royal jelly. But he's got groundwork, and he's the Tories are strong in that riding. And the Liberals and the Green and the NDP will be fighting for 2, 3, and 4. It'll be close. And Joe, this may upset you, probably not you, but maybe some of your listeners. I think the environment is dying out as an issue. Climate change,
yeah.
You know, like the glaciers are coming back in places, and anthropogenic global warming is a hot debate. You know, anthropogenic compared to the natural is minuscule, but of course, try and tell that to people. Yes, the proportions are small, but you know, we could talk a lot about, you know, ifs and ands or buts about the environment. And people still care about the environment. It's not a minor issue, but it's not the issues, I believe, at least, you know, you asked me to elect Elizabeth May. Not in that riding, not at this time.
Ezra Levant was on the program on Friday, and he said that he's predicting between 160 to 165 conservative seats in this election. I'll solicit a prediction from you. What do you think will happen on May 2nd?
Well, it's a ways away, and to make a prediction this early is you have to be almost prescient or lucky. However, I noticed that the Stop Harper website crashed because there were so many people hitting it. There is a Stop Harper movement in the country, and the media hasn't discovered it yet. Mind you, that was a story in the media, but it wasn't on page one. You know, I've watched a lot of this stuff. I see Harper getting nervous. He's working harder. He's having to fix mistakes, and he's becoming, I would say, more desperate to try and fix his negatives. And meanwhile, what positives does he have? Well, you know, he manages the economy and the finances well. Well, you know, good. But he's mean, and he's persecuting people, especially with Bill S-10, the marijuana bill. You know, why doesn't he just soften that and go after hardened criminals and hard drugs? But no, you can't get it through his thick head. And that's why there's a revolt against him. And it's not just that issue, but that's one of the big ones. And, you know, here he is. He's in a minority asking for a majority. And what's he doing to moderate or broaden his base? Nothing.
What about the positives of the other parties, especially Mr. Ignatieff and the Liberals?
Yeah, what positives for Ignatieff is sort of like my facetious response, but you know, that's why we have campaigns. And you know, I was listening to an ad this morning about, I've heard it so many times, my mother had Alzheimer's and we needed health care. And you know, everybody knows that he's from a diplomatic Russian family and they're full of money, but maybe they were. It's, you know, he's full of academia now, but you look at the history of liberal leaders, and you know, they've had some doozies, and yet it's kind of like the natural governing party, you know, even despite their leader, you know what you're getting. You know, I think Ignatieff is an improvement from what they've had before. He doesn't turn me off personally. You know, like, I don't dislike Ignatieff. He hasn't done anything to me. You know, I could see if I was in a riding where I had to choose between a strong Liberal and a weak NDP against a bad Tory, and there's good Tories and bad Tories, you know, I could hold my nose and vote Liberal. And I was a Trudeau Liberal way back when I was a kid, and I thought never again, but, you know, the world turns, and here we are. I can see probably not me where I live, because I'm on the North Island, and that's an NDP versus Tory riding, and I like the Tory personally. But Stephen Harper, in the minds of a lot of people, has got to go, and they'll be voting strategically to do so.
And in BC, it's the Conservatives are leading in BC. Is it the NDP that's number two, or is it still the Liberals?
Oh, I think it was the NDP last time.
Oh, was it?
I think the NDP has more seats than the Liberals.
Yeah.
But it is sort of like Big Tory and then the other two split. And I think it's going to be kind of more like a three-way split. However, that's with 2 weeks left or more. And, about 2 weeks.
Yeah, a lot can happen between now and then.
Yeah, so, you know, let's see who blunders and all that. But if it was held today, that's the phrase that pollsters ask, who would you vote for today? And it would be, a narrow Tory win, hopefully not a majority, in my opinion.
Yeah. John, thanks for this.
Oh, you're welcome, Joe, anytime. And thanks for your listeners, too.
John Twigg on the line from Burnaby this morning in Vancouver. I'm Joseph Planta.